Each week at this time, Lucky Strike offers you the chance to match your wits against those of four mental wizards. You provide the questions, and our experts try to answer them. Remember, under the new arrangement, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muff, you get the Junior Britannica plus a $50 war bond plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please, from the beginning, has been a completely spontaneous and unrehearsed program, and we will continue in that groove, maybe forever. Now, tonight, our veterans, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams, are here, and we have two guests. First, our old friend, the eminent novelist and critic, Christopher Morley, and the other, the versatile genius of stage and screen, the director and producer of The Magnificent Ambersons, the one and only Orson Welles. Now, Mr. Welles, as I understand it, you have a bet with the producer of our little show, whereby, if you miss any question, our producer is forced to buy a $500 war bond. Is that right? For himself, of course. Is that correct?
Well, you say it with such assurance, I'm sure that it is.
Yeah. All right.
He claims it's true.
It is true. Our producer is going to buy a $500 war bond for himself and the kiddies if Mr. Welles misses any question. So, Mr. Welles, this evening there'll be a contest in your mind between your honesty and your patriotism. I don't know who's going to win. We'll begin with a question from Dorothy Sawyer of New York. Here are three examples of frightfulness. Identify each one. Let's get two out of three if we can. Whose name, gentlemen, was used at one time to frighten the children of England? Mr. Welles?
King Bogey.
And who was that? King Bogey or the Bogeyman?
King Bogey is the original of the Bogeyman.
He was the first of the Bogeys?
Yes.
Was there a Bogey the first and Bogey the second?
No.
Bogey the third?
No dynasty, just His Majesty.
That is true. They did have a Bogey, frightened them with a Bogeyman, but there was an actual person who was here to frighten the children of England, Mr. Morley.
I was thinking Boney.
Yes, by change of a single letter, you get Boney. Who was Boney, Mr. Morley?
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yes, this was during his threatened invasion of England. That Napoleon
Bogey goes back further.
I'm sure it does. I think chronologically you came before Mr. Morley. But that's the only way. How about this one? Who frightened a nation with a new strange animal? This, again, is true history. Who frightened a nation with a new strange animal? Mr. Welles.
Cortez.
Oh, very good. That's quite right. How? What sort of animal was that?
A horse.
Yes. Had the Aztecs ever seen a horse in their lives?
No.
No, and they thought that the... men riding
also Pizarro in Peru.
I imagine the same thing. Yes. So, Mr. Morley?
Hannibal with elephants.
Yes, I guess that's right, too.
Did it scare him?
Sure, the large of the time.
Took a long time. How about this one? Who frightened the inhabitants of Grover's Mills, New Jersey? Oh, I have two hands on that. I think I'll take Mr. Adams.
Mr. W.
Yes, our eminent friend. Yes, do you remember that, Mr. Welles?
It comes back to me.
Vaguely. Mr. Welles, have you had any success in scaring people ever since that famous Martian broadcast of yours?
No, naturally. Everything's anticlimactic.
Anticlimactic. Well, you were too good at it.
Maybe now people scare him.
Doesn't look it, though.
In the present instance.
Oh, no, I don't believe it at all. Well, that gives us three out of three. Gentlemen are very good on frightfulness. And how about this one? Rhoda and... Saul Rice. So, by the way, you know, this week is back to school week, and it's as good a time as any to think about the kiddies, God bless them. In the spirit of the season, therefore, Lucky Strike, as you know, gives away a 12-volume set of the Junior Encyclopedia Britannica to every person whose question is used on this program. That's in addition to the $10 in war stamps. So, with the Junior Encyclopedia in the house, every American family can henceforth raise its own small Turin. God forbid. the Rices of New York City who send in this question get that Junior Encyclopedia for the little Rices. How about this? Name the movie and at least one of the stars, shall we say, of the pictures that had these plots. I'm going to tell you the plots. And you tell me the name of the movie and the name of the star. Here's the first. The unwilling object of the passionate embraces of the young Bedouin. She is about to plunge a dagger into her heart when she learns he is not a nomadic tribesman, but an Englishman, whereupon she swoons into his arms. Miss Kira.
That's the Valentino?
Valentino is right. In the Sheik, yes. Rudolph Valentino and Agnes Ayres in the Sheik. But how far back does that go?
Oh, to my boyhood almost.
That's the pre. Mr. Wells?
It doesn't go back that far. The Sheik. The Sheik is a motion picture.
Doesn't it even go back to pre-Wells period? You must have been a boy.
I remember the Sheik and the son of the Sheik.
Very well. You do remember both of them? At what time did you begin to remember things, Mr. Wells?
Much more pertinent is when I began to forget them.
Now, how about this one? See if you can remember this. Here's another movie plot. She cringes before her father's angry whip, suffocates in a closet, is pursued by a band of crooks along a riverbank, flings herself this way and that, and at the end she is killed by her own father. Don't be too affected, gentlemen. Can I get you out of that stupor, Mr. Morley? Remember that at all? Mr. Wells?
Been since my time.
Mr. Wells, your memory goes back to a very early period. Yeah. Almost embarrassingly early, I suppose. Broken Blossoms, Lillian Gish. Remember it now, Mr. Wells?
Indeed.
Yes, Broken Blossoms, Lillian Gish, a very fine picture for its day. Or what was it, Mr. Wells?
It was a very fine picture. It was the first Sweet Griffith, though.
The first Sweet Griffith? Yeah. Is that what you call them in the trade?
No, I call them in the trade.
How about this? A wicked vampire makes the head of a happy household the slave of temptation, and in spite of two attempts to return to his family, he follows her to a point of degradation and finally dies clutching one of her garments. Mr. Morley. It
must have been Theda Bara.
That's very good. Yes, it was Theda Bara.
But which garment it was, I don't remember.
Well, you've got the right star, all right. Now, what was the name of the picture? Mr. Akira? I can tell you it's the name of a beginning of a poem by Kipling.
Vampire.
Mr. Wells.
Yeah.
A pool there was.
Yeah.
Porter Emerson Brown.
That's right. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Thank you, gentlemen. How about this one from Mrs. Helen E. Masterson of Akron, Ohio? Here are the closing lines of some famous poems. What are the opening lines? I give you the last line. You give me the opening ones. Here's the closing line of the first. I never writ, nor no man ever loved. Mr. Kieran?
That is the last of Shakespeare's sonnets. I think it's about 116.
No, it isn't. It's exactly 116.
Oh, is it?
Not about 116. Mr. Kieran, how does it begin?
Well, that's what I'm trying to think in a hurry.
Mr. Morley, want to help out, Mr. Kieran?
Let me not to the marriage of true minds.
No.
Mr. Well, impediments.
That's right. How about it, Mr.
Wells? Chances removed. I would have said it was another sign.
That's a good thing.
Oh, no, love is right. That's right. Mark that looks so
thank you, pardon.
Very fine.
10 lines to go yet, these boys.
All right, try this one. Here's the closing line of another famous poem. How does it open? Mirth, with thee I mean to live. Mr. Adams.
Milton.
Yes. What poem and how does it open?
L'Allegro.
L'Allegro, how does it open? That's quite right. Mr. Kieran?
Peace. The nymph can bring with thee just and youthful jollity and so forth and so on.
That's in it. Well, how does it open, Mr. Kieran? Those are famous lines. Mr. Wells, let's come back to you.
I'm just stroking my forehead.
Something about cockcrow.
Hence, loathed melancholy of Cerberus and blackest midnight born in Stygian cave and so forth. I hardly think that I can give you full credit on that,
General.
Though, between you, you've got the author and the poem. Now, how about this one? Here's the last line. What's the opening line? With a fearful shriek, he leaped and fell across the picture dead. Mr. Wells?
Grand Duchess. Huh?
Not by a long shot. Mr. Morley?
It was down in somebody's barroom by the corner of the square.
Oh, boy.
Face on the barroom floor.
Face on the floor.
Face on the floor.
Face upon the floor. Yes.
How did it open?
It was a balmy summer's evening.
And a goodly crowd was there. That's quite right.
Somebody's barn at the corner of the square.
By the way, Mr. Wells, if Mr. Robert Browning is listening in to you, you've lost a friend.
It's true.
That gives us... Don't let it depress you. That gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from A.L. Pierce of New York? Now, in order to reach each of these places that I'll name, a person, in fact or in fiction, crossed a river. Name the river. Name the person. And let's get 3 out of 4. Now, the first place is Jericho. Who crossed what river to get to Jericho? Mr. Kieran?
I think Joshua went to Jericho.
He did indeed. That's
and
quite
I think
right.
he crossed the Jordan.
That's exactly right, Mr. Kieran.
Joshua. And the walls came tumbling down.
If this were Mr. Henderson's evening, Adams, it would be better for you. How about Harper's Ferry? Who crossed what river, Mr. Morley?
John Brown went to Harper's Ferry, and he might have crossed either the Potomac or...
Stop there.
Well, there's another river that comes in right there.
I guess there is.
The question is wrong. The question is wrong because Brown was in, did not have to cross the river to get to Harper's Ferry, but had spent a year there in the district before Harper's Ferry, the incident of Harper's Ferry. In other words, he did not march on it or cross a river to the arsenal.
It sounds as if you're there yourself, Mr. Wells.
Yeah. Is that right? That's absolutely right. He lived in a farmer's house.
I think that's right.
Stayed in a farmer's house in the district and would not have had to cross the river to get to the arsenal.
Of course, you know you're upsetting this entire program. But I think that's true.
Yeah, it is true.
Okay.
But you didn't give us any time, did you?
How about this one? Who crossed what river to get to Trenton? Mr. Kieran?
That would be General George Washington.
Yes, and the river being...
Well, he crossed the,
We all know that.
Mr. Kieran. Goodness gracious. Why?
Delaware.
The Delaware, yes. Cross the Delaware. Well, Mr. Kieran, I think I'm going to test you further. Was that the same river that he threw the dollar across?
No, that was the Rappahannock.
Have you got any inside information?
Or the Potomac.
Potomac.
Or both.
I thought it was the Rappahannock.
No, Potomac.
Well, maybe we'll hear from the Rappahannock.
He lived down at Potomac.
Who crossed what river to get to Sandusky? Mr. Adams?
Eliza Harris.
Eliza Harris, very good.
Crossed the Ohio River.
Yes.
To get to Sandusky, and there was ice in the river.
There was ice in the river, yes.
Number four.
And a chase
around. Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Yes, that's right. Well, that gives us... We get 3 out of 4 on that, thank you. We got 3 out of 4, and... Mr. Wells corrected us on one of our questions. I don't know who gets the $50 bond on this. How about this from Margaret Janso of South Bend, Indiana? Identify the fictional character who did the following things. These are all people who had a good deal to do with saloons and bars and such places. Identify the character who philosophized in his little saloon. This is a very cute little saloon. Mr. Wells?
Mr. Dooley,
yes. That was way before your time, Mr. Wells. How do you know these things?
The saloon's still there.
Try this one, gentlemen. The character who bragged and boasted of his courage in a tavern. Well, thought so. Do any other of you gentlemen care to answer any of these questions? How about this one? That's correct. Who listened to information, please, at a bar? Oh, everybody, of course. Mr. Kieran?
That was in the Woman of the Year. A big moving picture actor. Very nice fellow and very good actor.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Very good actor.
Who was playing the heroes?
Spencer Tracy. Yes, the character's name was Sam. And the picture opened, did it not, with him listening to information, please, over the radio. Very fine opening for... Pretty good picture, too. Now, let's see. Mr. Cross points out one thing, that time does not change.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it was true of the first cigarette that was ever smoked, and it's just as true today. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Yes, better tobacco makes a better cigarette. That's one good solid fact about smoking that never changes. And smokers, another fact that has been true year after year is that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. At auctions all over the South, when the finer, lighter, milder leaf, the real Lucky Strike leaf, comes up for sale, we consistently pay the price to get this better tobacco that means a better smoke for you. Indeed, ladies and gentlemen, the simple phrase, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, sums up the whole story of Lucky Strike, so round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. Mr. Fadiman, have I made clear that Lucky's give smokers what really counts, fine tobacco, so free and easy on the draw?
Mr. Cross, in 58 seconds, you've put the facts squarely on the line. And now we'll go on with a question that comes to us from a very famous name indeed. One of the great detectives of our time is named Ellery Queen, although I believe he's the inventor.
Who is a great detective?
Well, he's the inventor of two other fellows. And he has written in a question about other famous detectives. And Mr. Morley, I believe you're generally considered an expert on thrillers. We should expect some brilliant work from you. What famous detective never revealed his first name? His first name. These are going to be about names and detectives. Mr. Morley?
The first one of the person is Lecoq.
I don't remember whether there is a first name there or not. Now, you certainly
I've never heard of
more
him.
Of an expert than I am, Mr. Morley. You may be quite right, Mr. Wells.
Father Brown.
Father Brown is the one I was thinking of, yes. In the G.K. Chesterton, very brilliant stories, Father Brown never gives us his first name. What famous detective, on the other hand, gloried in many names, had many aliases? That's not so easy. Mr. Morley?
There was a fellow called Cleek, Cleek of the 40 Faces.
Who wrote the book?
Thomas W. Hanshew.
Oh, this is deep stuff. Well, this is way out of my depth.
Published by Doubleday Page and Company.
Got me there.
When I was a boy out there.
And he had many names in the story?
He had many faces, and I suppose the name went with each face that I don't remember.
Seems only reasonable.
I had to sell the remains.
Mr. Kieran?
Hawkshaw, the detective.
Hawkshaw? You mean the comic strip character?
He was always appearing in the
comic strip, indeed.
No.
He was in the play. The American theater. Hawkshaw.
Wasn't he always using... No, he had phony names and disguises.
Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with calling a section of the American theater a comic strip? A good deal of it is these days, Mr. Wells, you know. Miss Gypsy Rose Lee, I mean, that sort of thing. Well, we have to descend to those things in this program once in a while. Now, you may be right, Mr. Morley, and very probably are. I was thinking of Arsène Lupin, the famous French detective who had a number of other names, Leblanc and Prince Ronin, Louis Perrin.
Basically a thief, though, Arsène Lupin.
Was he?
A detective.
A rascal?
He was a thief and then a detective.
Yes, he was a Raffles kind of fellow.
Well, he was basically a jewel thief who sometimes solved problems, but usually simply was cleverly evaded the cops.
You wouldn't call him a detective?
No.
All right, I guess we'll add that to that confounded river that Mr. John Brown never brought.
Yeah.
Now, what...
escape artist.
It seems to me that I'm going to call that wrong, Mr. Morley, subject to correction at a later time.
You call it wrong.
Oh. You may be right. So give Ellery Queen a chance, poor fellow. What famous detective had no name at all? Oh, this is very tough. I think Ellery Queen is challenging the fellow to a terrific game of wits and erudition. Mr. Morley, any idea at all? It's a story by the Baroness Ortsey. Wrote a book called The Old Man in the Corner. And you know of him only as The Old Man in the Corner. Well, that sends a $50 war bond to Ellery Queen.
A little abstruse, though.
A little abstruse, I think so, Mr. Morley. And a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you very much. What Ellery Queen is going to do with Encyclopedia Britannica, I have no idea. Here's one from James B. Zabin of New York City. This is a serious geographical question, gentlemen. The United States, let us assume, is to help construct a highway linking the United States and Panama. Name five of the nations that lie between this country and Panama. Actually, there are six, I believe, and we can all get together on this. Mr. Wells, you want to start us off?
Mexico.
Mexico is right.
Guatemala.
Guatemala is right.
Honduras.
Very good.
San Salvador.
Very good.
Dominican Republic? No, I'm wrong. Dominican Republic's an island.
I didn't hear you say Dominican Republic.
No, thank you.
Mr. Morley?
Nicaragua.
Nicaragua.
Yes, that gives us five of them. I think, how about British Honduras? Which is different from Honduras.
Yes, Honduras.
And also there's Costa Rica. That would give us seven. Well, we got five out of the seven. And that little extra one that you added on, Mr. Wells.
I'm clearing my throat.
Yes, sir. I realize. What I like about the way you clear your throat is the way you syllabificate it. Tell every syllable. How about this one from Mrs. Ruth Newland of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? This one about people who slept a long time. Who slept for 42 hours? 42 hours. Mr. Wells, you say you have on occasion? This is a fictional character. Although maybe that doesn't apply at all.
Somebody who fought against Dempsey, but I can't remember.
No, it was Juliet. Remember, she was put to sleep by the potion in Romeo and Juliet. Isn't it the friar who says in this borrowed likeness of shrunk death, thou shalt continue 42 hours? Mr. Wells, will it come back to you?
No.
You never played Juliet? How about this? Who slept for 20 years? 20 years, Mr. Adams?
Harvey Winkle.
Harvey Winkle. That's right. By W. Irving. And who slept for 100 years? Going up, boy. Who slept for 100 years? Mr. Kieran?
Take the Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty, yes. And how was she awakened?
By a kiss from Prince Charming, who came along.
Yes, by a kiss from Prince Charming. Very good. How about this one? Mrs. Rufus Jones of New York City sends in this one about landladies, famous landladies of fiction. What landlady had a retired army surgeon and a narcotic addict as boarders? Mr. Morley?
Mrs. Hudson at 221B Baker Street.
It sounds like you lived there yourself, Mr. Morley. It's the address, one of the most famous addresses in the
world. Of
Sherlock Holmes. Yes. And, of course, the retired army surgeon?
Dr. Watson.
Yes. And Sherlock Holmes, the narcotic addict. What landlady of fiction saw her son go off to sea when one of her boarders died? One of her boarders died, and directly thereafter, her son went off to sea in one of the most famous stories in English. What story? Mr. Adams?
Might be Moby Dick.
No. No, it is not. And I heard that, too. You weren't clearing your throat.
No, I was
not. Mr. Kieran? What landlady saw her son go off to sea when one of her boarders died?
Aye, that was in Treasure Island.
That's right. Mr. Kieran, very good. In Treasure Island. Who was her son?
The son was the boy, the hero.
Yes, Jim Hawkins. And who was the boarder who died?
That was Old Pew, wasn't
yes,
it?
Blind Pew.
No, he was not the boarder. No,
wasn't
Pew was a visitor.
There goes that John Brown fellow again. Go ahead, Mr. Wells.
No, I'm out on a limb. I can't think of his name. Give me a bottle of rum, boy.
Oh, no, he didn't die.
Yes, he did. Died in horrible agony. Was Pew that was no border.
You killed him.
Right. Pew killed him. Gave him the...
My gosh, I think that's right. Sure. I think that's right.
Yeah.
It was the other fellow.
Black Dog, wasn't he?
Oh. The Black Dog was another character with Pew who arrived.
Wells, this is your last appearance on this program. My Lord.
Seeker. With his chest.
I thought I had enough trouble with Kieran for 4 years. What landlady of fiction... I'm afraid to say anything now. The what landlady of fiction sued her boarder for breach of promise?
Mr. Wells.
Can't think of her name.
Pickwick Papers. Pickwick Papers. Her name is Mrs.
Why, everybody knows that.
Bardell.
Well. Bardell.
Yes, that's exactly right. Everybody had their hands up on that. Mrs. Bardell sued Mr. Pickwick. I guess that gives us 2 out of 3 and gives Mr. Wells 1 out of 1. And now, before we go on, here's Mr. Rysdale, who believes that the question, does it earn you your bread and butter, is a good way to test a man's knowledge.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, on the subject of smoking, it's worth your while to listen to men who actually earn their living in buying, selling, and handling tobacco. It's simply common sense. For independent tobacco experts down south, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, know tobacco from A to Z. They also know who buys what tobacco. For they see the sales year after year at auctions all over the South. So their overwhelming preference for one cigarette, Lucky Strike, speaks for itself. Indeed, sworn records show that with these experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Smokers, isn't this tobacco expert's stamp of approval your clear proof that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco? Why not profit by the experience of the experts? Choose a cigarette you know is made of fine tobacco. Choose Lucky Strike. So round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw.
seconds, Sir Rosedale. That took 59 seconds. And now a question from Randall B. Kester of Portland, Oregon. It's about famous animals of fiction. What animal, I guess you'd call him an animal, used a typewriter? Animal that used typewriter. Mr. Well.
Archie.
Oh, was Archie, Mr. Well?
Archie was a cockroach.
Yes, he was a cockroach. There still is, matter of fact. Hasn't changed a bit. And he's found in what books?
In the works of Don Markley.
Yes, some of the funniest books ever written. Mr. Morley, I know you had your hand up because you're an old Markley fancier. What was the main peculiarity of Mr. Archie's typewriting, Mr. Morley?
He couldn't push down the shift key to work the capital, so it was all done in lowercase.
Yes, and still is.
He drove on the keys with his head the way many writers do.
And many writers don't. What animal of fiction was put into a teapot? Animal was put into a teapot, Mr. Kieran.
The March Hare, I believe. The Dormouse.
Dormouse.
In Alice in Wonderland.
Why is the Dormouse called the Dormouse?
Because he slept. He had a sleepy appearance.
Yes.
Dormouse.
Yes, that's right. What animal ate a hat? Ate a hat. Was a hat eater. Hataphage. Mr. Wells? Mr. Wells, don't you remember what animal ate a hat?
I know a man who ate a hat.
Tell us about him some other time. But, didn't you produce a play called Horse Eats Hat, Mr. Wells, one time in your career?
Yes, I did.
You don't remember it? You don't remember the things you produced, do you? That
not.
Certainly is not true of the rest of your audience, however.
That is rather good. Rather nice,
yes. Well, that gives us one wrong. 2 out of 3 is okay. I think we'll have time for this one from Francis Shaughnessy of Worcester. Complete these speeches from the tragedies of Shakespeare. This push will chair me ever or deceit me now. I have lived long enough. How does it go on, Mr. Wells?
My way of life has fallen into the sea of the yellow leaf.
That's beautiful, Mr. Wells, and not an easy one. Here's another. When you shall these unlucky deeds relate, speak of me as I am, nothing extenuate, nor set down aught in malice, Mr. Kieran.
But as one who loved not wisely, but too well, our fellow, the more of that.
Thank you, Mr. Kieran. That's swell. How about this one? We at the height are ready to decline. Mr. Wells.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Kieran.
There is a tide in the affairs of men which taken at the flood and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Kieran. And that's well. 3 out of 3. And that's all we'll have time for. Lucky Strike is indebted to you, Mr. Morley and Mr. Wells, for lending us your brilliant talents this evening. Now, in a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guests. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica and one $50 war bond. And speaking of bonds, let me tell you a short story. There was a town once in Czechoslovakia called Lidice. On June 10th, the Germans murdered its men, imprisoned its women and children, destroyed every stick and stone of the village, and announced the fact proudly to the world. Lidice is a symbol of this war. To prevent the whole world from becoming one great Lidice, buy war bonds and keep on buying. Now, next week, the terrific trio, Adams, Kieran, and Levant, will be here. And as for our guest, we announce by popular request a return engagement of that eminent baritone and director of the Office of Price Administration, Mr. Leon Henderson. Those who are listening, please remember to send your letters with questions, and please don't forget the correct answers to Information Please, which is 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we'll listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs. Thank you.